anymore. And you want a mark of how mad everything is? The rot began with that cull in 2019 when Cummings and Johnson got rid of anybody prepared to tell the truth. A truth that has now become absolutely irrefutable and irresistible. Brexit was going to mess up the country in unimaginable ways. And yet, of course, the people punting the lie that there is a brilliant Brexit, it just goes to a different school, or that we were right to support it, are somewhat on the march. Tobias Elwood, is he still in the Commons? I can't remember. It's not looking good for them either way.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, experts have warned that an increase in the number of children taking knives to school is being driven in part by social media. Figures seen by LBC show there were 2,300 such cases in the last full school year, up 60% in 2 years. That amounts to 12 pupils being found with knives every day. The Shadow Communities Secretary, Kevin Hollenrake, says it's a terrible phenomenon.
Something we must stamp out in our society. And I think it's partially because I think people feel less safe. It's partially because of this gang culture that's arisen within, not just in this country, but other countries too. And we've got to stamp it out.
The government has set a target of halving knife crime over the next decade. Exporters are facing further uncertainty after a US court blocked President Trump's trade tariffs. Judges have ruled Mr. Trump did not have the right to impose the levies using emergency powers. An appeal could see the case reach the Supreme Court. Complaints about substandard living conditions in social housing have risen fivefold in as many years. The Housing Ombudsman has warned that simmering anger about the poor state of homes could lead to social disquiet. It dealt with nearly 6,400 disputes between residents and social landlords in England in the year to March. Israel says it will establish 22 new Jewish settlements in the occupied West Bank. Some 700,000 Israeli settlers live in the West Bank and East Jerusalem in communities considered illegal under international law. Trent Murray is LBC's correspondent in Tel Aviv. He says it would mark the biggest expansion in decades.
Of that 22, several already exist as outposts, but they've not had government approval. But under this announcement, they would now be made legal under Israeli law. Of course, the issue of settlements is one of the most controversial aspects of the dispute. This is in an area that the Palestinians would like to see as part of a future state.
An environment minister has warned water could have to be rationed without new reservoirs in Britain. Emma Hardy's confirmed plans to fast-track the construction of two new reservoirs in Lincolnshire and Cambridgeshire. Ministers are taking over the planning process from local authorities. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 87.23. That's down 3. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 19. LBC weather, cloudy with patchy rain for many places, sunny spells developing across central and eastern areas, a high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Got an unexpected message, phone call or email that claims to be from HMRC? Take care. It could be a criminal pretending to be us. To protect yourself, never rush to share personal information or part with your money. Learn to recognise signs of a scam, such as being put under pressure to share bank details. And if something seems fishy, report it to HMRC straight away by searching HMRC Scams on gov.uk. Protect, recognise, report.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after 11. Just a quick post-mortem. I could have carried that conversation on for another hour, actually, but I have a feeling we'll be returning to that territory quite frequently in the coming months and quite possibly years. But this is nice from Jimmy. This is one of the reasons why I get out of bed every morning. What a great caller. An open-minded, reasonable Tory. Very interesting for me to hear their perspective outside of my left-wing echo chamber. Clearly a... decent person. Carenza says that Dominic Grieve also deserves a mention. You're absolutely right. A few of you picking up on this point that Helen makes. Rory Stewart, James, I reckon he could start a revolution. He couldn't even run for London mayor. He couldn't even sustain a you know, raise the necessaries for a decent tilt at becoming London mayor, Helen. So I don't know that it would be grounds for a revolution. And Tim wonders, forgive me, this is mildly rude, so if you're of a very delicate disposition, then please avert your ears. Tim wants to know whether you have to do a patriotic poo after you've had a patriotic breakfast. The only man who can answer that question, Tim, is currently sitting in the House of Lords, a position he received as a reward for presiding over one of the most cack-handed acts of diplomacy and negotiation that this country has ever endured. Anna Soubry writes, Andrew, she's not in the House of Commons anymore. She's back working as a barrister. I think she was part of that cull in 2019. So, yeah, that conversation could have continued today, but will indubitably continue at a later date. You still don't play with me in the way that I think you should, you know, because there's nothing really in the news today that prompts that. There's no vote of no confidence in Kemi Badenoch. It's so odd. All the years that I've put into looking after you, it's so odd that you still don't look after me on a day like today. I mean, that was a brilliant phone-in, don't get me wrong, I'm not complaining. But it is not a morning where my phone switchboard lights up like a Christmas tree. If I'm essentially getting a topic, I'm moulding a topic out of thin air, as opposed to saying, here is a story about something that is happening. I don't know why that is, because I thought the calls today were absolutely exceptional. And really insightful, and that's why I love those topics. And yet, oddly, the queue is generally not quite as long as it will be on other subjects. 6 minutes after 11 is the time. I don't know how long the queue will be on this subject. I realised some time ago that there is no point doing this job, although obviously some practitioners of the noble art of phone and radio disagree. But there's no point doing this job if you don't really listen to what people tell you. And one of the very first things you have to do, and it was probably 10 years before I realised this, one of the first things you have to do is acknowledge when you don't know anything. How can you have a strong opinion about something you don't know anything about? We had a call, didn't we, a couple of weeks ago, that was the distillation of that problem. A caller who said to me with a straight face, oh, I often get into trouble because I have very strong opinions. And so I asked him to justify his opinions, and he said, well, I don't know. I'm not an expert. I don't have any answers to your questions. And I just thought, how can you have very strong opinions and no understanding of the issue? It feels as if that's the constituency that everybody's fighting over at the moment, people with very strong opinions but no actual understanding of the facts. And it's a weird job, this, because In the traditional context, you are supposed to have strong opinions about almost everything. And when I started doing this job, I kind of did. So I think I would have used, in the context of a conversation about young people who carried knives, I would have used the word scrotes a lot. I don't know if you were listening at the time. I used to be very fond of the word scrotes. Now, why is scrotes such an effective word when you're discussing young people who carry knives? There are two or three reasons for that. The first is it actually dehumanises. That little scrote, scumbag. It dehumanises this person. They cease to be a human being with agency, making decisions for complicated and sometimes even sympathetic reasons. They are just a scrote with a knife. And that is very much the position I would have taken 15 years ago, or when I first started doing this. A scrote with a knife. How do we get them off the streets? Bring back the birch. I never would have said that, but I would have taken a caller who did. Scrotes. So it dehumanises and it oversimplifies. How do you deal with a frightened nine-year-old? And I'm not using that age by accident. How do you deal with a frightened nine-year-old who started carrying a knife because he believes he's in a kill-or-be-killed situation? Oh, just bring back the birch for little scrotes like that. Do you see what I mean? You wouldn't. If you were sitting in front of a frightened nine-year-old who carries a knife, you wouldn't use the language of scrotes and corporal punishment, or, you know, hang 'em and flog 'em, or whatever the modern equivalent may be. So it dehumanises and it oversimplifies, but it also alienates. Because if you open your newspaper or turn on your radio and hear knife crime being discussed by somebody who doesn't think you need to understand things in order to justify a strong opinion, someone who's never stopped to wonder how on earth a 9-year-old or a 10-year-old or an 11-year-old could pick up a knife, then you have a conversation that I wish was merely pointless. I wish it was a merely pointless conversation. But of course, it's much worse than pointless. It actually disseminates those things that we just identified. It makes the oversimplification of the issue more commonplace, more widespread. And it makes the dehumanizing of the humans involved, the individuals involved, the young people involved, more popular. That the more it happens in public discourse, the more people sign up to the idea, A, that these people are subhuman because they carry knives, and because the prospect of being confronted by someone carrying a knife is fundamentally frightening, we are all primed to buy this notion. They're scum, they're not like us, they're subhuman, they're scroats, and we buy into the oversimplification. We buy into the idea that it is easily fixed by somehow being stricter. Not that you need to listen to people to understand why they do what they do. I won't say that word again, I promise. A few of you are a little unhappy with it. But it was a word I used a lot on the radio. And I think that's why, looking back, I think it allowed me to dehumanize the people doing it, to take call after call after call from people who had never lived in a world where knife carrying was endemic, never lived in a community where knife carrying was endemic, but had very strong opinions, and learn together precisely nothing. But, as I've explained, probably make things worse. My relatively new colleague here at LBC has undertaken an extraordinary investigation. You can read about it on the LBC website. It's Kill or Be Killed. Actually, use the app, for goodness sake. What's the point of having one of the coolest apps in town if you're not going to be accessing your news through that? So Andy Hughes, our crime editor, and Connor Hand, our sort of all-round good guy, have written this article up. But it's Andy's investigation, and he's been speaking to young people who carry knives. It's an extraordinary report. But what is also extraordinary about it is that some people listening to this program now will be utterly unsurprised by everything in it, and other people will be profoundly shocked. And we live in the same country, and you listen to the same radio program, and you're about to receive the same invitation to contribute. But what I don't think we'll do is take very strong opinions from people who have no knowledge or understanding of the issues. Going to do it in this order. First, I want you to hear Andy speaking to the mentor of a 9-year-old who was caught carrying a knife in school. I'll say that again. A 9-year-old boy who was caught carrying a knife in school.
He said to me that he'd carry a knife to protect himself because in his mind it was kill or be killed mentality.
He's 9 years old though.
I know, but he's in his mind is like, they can't get to my brother, they get to me, but I'm not allowing them to kill me. So if I've got a knife, I've got a chance of killing them first. And
so he was willing to use the knife?
Oh, yeah, 100%, to protect himself.
His older brother, a gang member, had been jailed, and he felt that his brother's enemies might try to hurt his brother by hurting him. They couldn't get to him, so he felt that he had no choice but to be prepared to use a knife if people came to him. If that lad survives until the age of 18, he may sound like this. 18-year-old former gang member, also speaking to Andy Hughes.
This kid, he must have banged like a knife in, but it wasn't like no like normal knife. It was like one of them big, machete, like the red.
Brought
the
machete into school.
Yeah, like the red machetes. Cars pulled up outside the school and that. Like, started ramming the gates and that with their cars.
Why do you think there's this culture now of kids just thinking it's normal to carry a knife?
They've seen social media and they think it's normal.
That's interesting. And finally, a head teacher of a secure unit for young people.
I've worked with young people that have been stabbed and murdered with knives. I've worked with young people that are in prison that have killed other young people. Kids are becoming desensitized to things that we would once upon a time be completely shocked and blown away by. There's also lots of young people that do not necessarily want to commit violence, and they're not thinking, I'm going to carry a knife because I want to stab someone and hurt someone, but because of all the stuff they're seeing on social media, they're scared.
That's really interesting. It's a new dimension to a conversation that we've had many times on the programme, because I was introduced to the concept of carrying a knife because you're scared, not because you're aggressive and angry and want to hurt someone, but because you're scared of someone who is aggressive and angry and wants to hurt you. I was introduced to that concept by you. It was only because I realised some years ago that there's no point inviting contributions from people with strong opinions and no understanding or knowledge. If you want to learn stuff, you can still make popular radio that way. It's great. Cue for the ghost train, cue for the speak your ape machine, all that stuff. But you don't learn anything. And now I'm learning, as a consequence of Andy's investigation, about the role that social media plays, which in some ways is even more depressing because it's less logical. If you have beef with somebody who carries a knife, you are more likely, I imagine, to leave the house tomorrow morning with a knife than you were yesterday, right? But if your fears are born of things that you're seeing on social media, I mean, remember, it won't be complete strangers. It will be involving individuals, areas that you know, then you are also now more likely to leave home with a knife. So 11:15 is the time. What I'd really like you to do is, if you've never phoned a radio station before in your life, I want you to tell me about why you started carrying a knife the first time. What? Why? Because it's easy to dehumanise. What I can't do is imagine that it's me. The best way to empathy is to try to get into somebody else's shoes. If you can get into somebody else's shoes, you're halfway to empathy. It's why fascists hate culture and art, because art is often the finest way in which a human being can imagine what it's like to be another human being. It's why the post office scandal didn't really engage the British public's imagination until it was dramatised. Art and culture create universes that you can imagine inhabiting in a way that news reportage and radio phone-in shows can rarely achieve. But I can't imagine it. I mean, goodness me, I don't think it's possible to have had a more privileged education than I had, from private school to private school to public school. I didn't grow up in a leafy suburb. I grew up on the mean streets of Kidderminster. But I grew up in a very middle-class family. And I don't know where the pivot would have been, you know. I don't know where the path not taken would have been a path that led me to knife carrying, that led me to carry a knife. But it's not beyond my ken that could have happened, but it didn't. So what happened to you? When and why did you, like that 9-year-old boy with what his own mentor describes as a kill or be killed mentality, when and why did you start carrying a knife? 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. When and why? Hit the numbers now, you will get through.
This is LBC. For simple, fuss-free pet insurance policies for cats and dogs, visit petsinapickle.co.uk. For actual pickles, try the supermarket.
Big, big, big motoring world. Wow, Motoring World.
Yes, that's right. Big Motoring World is also Wow Motoring World because we price check our cars every day to guarantee you our best price, with up to 95% of them below market value. Big Motoring World, we're big on what matters to you. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
Little Plus Fruity Super Spin. Simply shop and spin to win a free fresh fruit coupon with every shop. Download the Little Plus app to get by switching to the Retail Industry Awards Fresh Produce Retailer of the Year. 18 plus GB residents, various prizes available, subject to availability. Ends 4th of the 6th, 25. Full T's and C's apply. See little.co.uk/spin.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
19 minutes after 11 is the time. I mean, you are allowed to ring in if you have phoned a radio station before. I just quite like the idea of this being a story or a topic that prompts you to do something you've never done before, because I'm interested in the first time that you took a knife out of the house. What does it feel like? Do you feel more scared? Or do you feel less scared? You have to feel less scared, don't you? Because, well, if you felt more scared, you wouldn't do it. That simple moment, that first time, it's going to be your mum's probably. You've got it out of the kitchen drawer or you've ordered it online. That can sometimes happen. And the idea that this nine-year-old that Andy's been speaking to the mentor of, who intended to use it. What were you frightened by when you were nine? Chris points out in a text, it was frightened of Doctor Who. He used to hide behind the sofa when the Daleks came on the screen around about the age of nine. Imagine being frightened of physical harm being inflicted upon you by your 18-year-old brother's enemies. And what would you tell that nine-year-old to do, if not to do what he's decided to do? I don't know the answer to that question, by the way. I'd tell him not to bloody carry a knife, but when he said, well, what am I going to do if they can't... I mean, everybody gets hurt, don't they? It's a crazy situation, this. Nothing new about it, except that social media element. And I'll add that to my list of charges for you this hour. Just talk me through, if you can, how social media... I think I know the answer to that, but I want to hear it from somebody who lives it, or someone who's much better qualified to contribute than I am. Why has social media massively increased the likelihood or the temptation to carry a knife? What is precisely the role that social media plays in this kind of context? 0345 6060973 is the number you need. This from Kezia is important. James, please don't let the talk focus on black boys, as is often the common narrative. I remember your interview with Akala a few years ago explaining that the common denominator is not race. The same thing happens to young white boys too. Take Cleveland, one of the highest areas of knife crime in England, predominantly white working class. Glasgow, once known as the knife crime capital of Europe. Focusing this issue on black boys not only doesn't move the conversation forward, it also neglects young white boys who are in danger too. We need to look at the way Scotland drastically reduced knife crime by approaching it holistically. I would love to hear a clip from that interview this hour. It was so important. That was a long time ago, and it was actually, I recorded it for a different platform. But, I mean, Carla's comments and work in this field is extremely well documented, and he points out the third thing that perhaps dehumanising achieves, particularly when you introduce an ethnic element, is the oversimplification of it becoming a race-based issue when it's a poverty and crime-based issue. The West Midlands now is the crime capital of the United Kingdom. So much of online commentary in this field is directed at attacking Sadiq Khan for being brown that you could be forgiven for not knowing that the West Midlands, which of course had a Tory mayor for most of the last few years, has developed a reputation as the knife crime capital of the United Kingdom. So it's not unique to any community or any locale, but it is increasingly commonplace, and these children are getting younger. 22 minutes after 11 is the time. Why and when did you first start carrying a knife? Or, I mean, maybe introduce parents into the conversation. When did you realise that your child was? When did you realise that your son was carrying a knife, and what did you do about it? I'm always looking for new ways into this conversation, because it can become hackneyed and predictable and cliched. And you know, and I know, that when a kid dies, when a kid is killed, stabbed to death or horribly injured, parents are utterly, utterly heartbroken. The middle class temptation is to think that they could somehow have done more. They could have played a more meaningful role. They could have been more aware of the problems that their child was facing. But how many of us know for sure what our 13-year-olds and 14-year-olds are doing of an evening? How many of us have any real certain knowledge, certainly by the time they get to 15, 16, 17, of what they're up to? So from both sides of the family divide, I want to know why you did it. And I want to know what it's like to find out that your child has, is, was. Okay? 0345 6060973 is the number that you need. Let's start in Leeds. Dave's there. Dave, what would you like to say?
Ange, I'm a big fan of yours.
Thank you, mate.
But you're talking about the running knives through fear.
Yes.
So in like mid-90s, I was about 19, 20 years old. Mixed race guy. Quite a lot of racism around in them days.
Yeah, still is.
Oh, it's even worse now. But it was like some abuse or threats. Time you could just buy a knife from market.
I got it. There's something wrong with your phone line. I don't know whether that's just kicked in since you came on air, but it's we're going to try and fix that. It's clicking in and out a bit. Johnny picks up on my point about empathy, writing, the far right hate the left because they employ empathy and the far right lack the capacity for empathy, so they deride and mock empathetic understanding. I think I feel a woke watch coming on, and I've got a rather good one for you today. I abhor the idea of knife carrying, but as a youngster, I was jumped on in an unprovoked attack by a gang. It ended up as a police matter. I knew those involved. I think it was relatively unusual back then. It's more commonplace now, but it stayed with me, that feeling of helplessness. For a year, I scanned my environment every time I left a building or a car. This is actually a study in empathy, and I appreciate it, because you are imagining what it would feel like to be somebody else. Even now, he writes, I relive the attack. It stayed with me, the helplessness. Carrying a weapon is obviously born of fear for many individuals. It's very much a prospered position to not understand feeling the need to protect your actual physical safety. Let's go back to Dave. Dave, I think that's a better line. So you're 18, 19 or 20. There's a lot of racial abuse around. And what did you do? What happened next?
So I bought this knife. So I thought if somebody comes at me, or two or three of them coming at me, I'm going to have to defend myself. So fortunately, I never did use it.
What made you feel that that would be a likely scenario?
Well, some of these threats were quite graphic.
And what else could you have done?
If you know what I mean.
No, I didn't. Well, people are threatening you verbally, and you think that the journey from a verbal threat into a physical attack is pretty short.
Because some of the people I knew these guys, and if they were going to get hold of me, it wasn't going to be good for me.
When did you stop?
Probably about 6 months after.
How come? Just you felt safer?
Because,
or?
No, I just thought I can run pretty fast in them days.
I shouldn't laugh, because, I mean, it's fight or flight, isn't it? That's the classic,
exactly. So
that's the hormonal response.
I either run and I've got no consequences, or I stay and end up in prison.
I wonder how many people, if we were to break down every kid in the country currently carrying a knife now, how many would fall into the category of doing it for fear of what would happen if they didn't, and how many are doing it in the hope of actually using it to do something awful? Do you see what I mean?
I think people in the situation I was in is probably not that common, but if you're going to be involved with gangs or, you know, territory disputes, drugs, they are going to carry them, because drug dealers are absolutely... They've got balls of steel. They don't care what they do.
And of course, they will hurt and stab to protect their income.
If you're going to get into that line of business, but if you're going to get into that line of business, you've got to have big balls, because...
Stop saying that, will you? It's a family radio show.
Sorry.
You've got to have cojones.
Yeah. Because
that's one word.
Absolutely ruthless people.
Yeah, and if you find yourself on the wrong end of that kind of situation, even if you're a 9-year-old boy, you're going to carry a knife. But I don't imagine it ever makes the situation better. In the event of a conflict actually happening, it probably just means that everybody's going to end up getting stabbed. Not by any stretch of the imagination, just the person who's being victimised rather than the person who is attacking. It's coming up to 12:30. I mean, on a much lighter note, I have got an absolute humdinger. Of a woke watch for you today, because the point I made earlier in the programme was that I constantly forget about these things. But I don't know that I forgot about woke watch, or whether it actually just got overtaken by events. But this is, it's an extraordinary deployment of the word. So it merits at least a temporary resurrection of the beloved feature known as...
Woke Watch.
This is a headline from today's Daily Telegraph, right? Baffling woke roundabout sends motorists round the bend. I suppose we are revisiting a world in which a breakfast can be patriotic. Because in the world of the Daily Telegraph, a roundabout can be woke. Do you know why it's woke? I'm gonna leave you to guess. Can you work out how a roundabout, I nearly went a bit Devon then, a roundabout. Can you work out how a roundabout could possibly be woke? I shall tell you after the latest news headlines. When I will also, I'm availing myself of Simon Marks's presence in this country at the moment on a daily basis for 2 days running. He will be joining us this time to talk about an extraordinary development in Donald Trump's tariff war that speaks to a growing sense of, well, incompetence and or corruption at the heart of almost everything he does. But first, Thomas Watts has your headlines.
Figures seen by LBC show a significant rise in the number of children being caught with knives at school. Cases are up by 60% over 2 years to an average of 12 discoveries every day. Downing Street says a court ruling blocking Donald Trump's trade tariffs is a domestic matter for the US. Federal judges have ruled Mr. Trump exceeded his authority by using an emergency law to impose the taxes. Sir Keir Starmer is to describe Nigel Farage's tax plans as fantasy economics that could lead to a Truss-style meltdown. He's due to give a speech this morning after the Reform UK leader set out a number of new policies earlier in the week. LBC weather, cloudy with patchy rain for many places, sunny spells developing in central and eastern areas, a high of 23 degrees.
This is LBC. In the time it takes your nan to tell a story, you could find out if you can claim for a missold PCP agreement. Visit claimsforcars.com, answer a few easy questions, and you'll find out in seconds. If you financed a car between 2007 and 2021 and weren't shown different options or discussed dealer commission, you could have a claim. Claims for Cars is helping people get back thousands on a no-win, no-fee basis. Get the answer in seconds at claimsforcars.com.
I've had a few. Jimmy was my first. He was gorgeous and gave me so much space. Then there was Lorenzo. He was exciting, but also reliable. Elvis is my latest. I love him the most. He makes me feel so warm with his heated seats and steering wheel. It might sound strange to love a car and name them, but it's not just me. Almost every Honda Jazz owner stays with the Jazz and buys another. True love starts with a test drive. Honda, the power of dreams.
With Little Plus Fruity Super Spin, simply shop and spin to win a free fresh fruit coupon with every shop. Download the Little Plus app to get by switching to the Retail Industry Awards Fresh Produce Retailer of the Year. 18 plus GB residents, various prizes available, subject to availability. Ends 4th of the 6/25. Full T's and C's apply. See little.co.uk/spin.
Tired of watching your uninvested cash do nothing? With the Bank of England base rate reducing, investment platform IG is doing something extraordinary. IG is offering a whopping 8.5% AER variable on all uninvested cash. Yes, 8.5%. Just open an account, transfer money in, and make one investment before May 31st to unlock this incredible rate. Visit IG.com now to open an investment account today. Your capital is at risk. GIA, ISA and SIP accounts only. Boosted rate applies until 31st August 2025. Terms and conditions apply.
Find out if you can claim compensation for a missold PCP agreement or a faulty DPF filter. Just visit claimsforcars.com and you'll get the answer in seconds. James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
33 minutes after 11. Good morning, James. Is it because the roundabout forces you to turn left? That's from David. Kieran suggests, has it been painted with rainbow paint, James? They really hate that. Benny picks up on a theme. A roundabout may be woke because you can only go left, James, except for the magic roundabout in Hemel Hempstead. Is it a Dutch-style roundabout with those protected cycle lanes? A roundabout is woke because it makes you give way to the right. I quite like that. So basically, I've used that word I used to ban on the programme. Your contributions boil down to either the correct answer, a claim that a woke roundabout is a roundabout that either forces you to give way to the right or means that you can only turn left, which wouldn't be a roundabout, would it? Well, no, it could be. Or the correct answer, which is indeed the cycle lanes. It is a roundabout where motorists are expected to give way or to prioritise cyclists and pedestrians. The things people get angry about. It's partly why I never do motoring issues, because if you need the definition of a subject where people have strong opinions and absolutely no ability to explain themselves, then motoring up to and including road rage would probably be that. But this is indeed the Hemel Hempstead in Hertfordshire roundabout, including a dedicated space for cyclists that keeps them away from motorised vehicle traffic. Down with that sort of thing. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is our first, but hopefully not our last, woke roundabout.
Woke Watch.
Simon Marks is here for a number of reasons. Firstly, I just don't like seeing him loitering in the corridors with nothing to do. It was either get him in or go send Keith upstairs to buy him a sandwich. But also because I have failed. I tried for probably the first month to keep up. To actually chronicle all the major moments, all the things that Donald Trump is doing in Washington. I mean, we are in London here. You're usually in Washington, so you're going to be much closer to the action than we are. But that is what they do. They overwhelm you with events, with occurrences, with actions, until the point where you can't really see the wood for the trees. But you have to keep trying, and that is why I grab Simon Marks whenever I have the opportunity and drag him into the studio, because it's the tariffs today that are falling to pieces. So he doesn't have to back down this time because the court have essentially slapped him before he did.
Yeah, I mean, I think, James, it is almost impossible to overstate what the court in Manhattan last night did. This International Trade Court, it is a US federal court, a three-judge bipartisan panel, and unanimously they said to Donald Trump, you did not have the legal authority to do what you did on Liberation Day. Remember April the 2nd, he walked into the Rose Garden of the White House, engaged in that kind of Eurovision Song Contest presentation of his reciprocal tariffs, revealing nation by nation, percentage point by percentage point, the impact that his government was about to have, devastating impact on economies all over the world. And of course promised Americans not only that that was Liberation Day, but it was the turnaround. He had said on Air Force One just a few days prior, you're going to get so rich as a result of these tariffs, you're not even going to know how to spend all of the money. And this three-judge court last night said, sorry, mate, America's not actually a dictatorship. Yeah. You do not have the
legal... they didn't say yet, did they?
They didn't say yet.
Say yes.
Right, exactly. You didn't have the legal authority to do what you did under the terms of the law that he cited, the International Economic Emergency Powers Act.
Yeah.
It's a 1977 law that was designed to regulate the economy during a time of absolute national emergency. And Donald Trump has grabbed that law and used it as justification, saying that we are under economic attack from countries all over the world that have spent decades ripping America off. I need to use these extraordinary powers to impose these tariffs. And the court has said, sorry, that's not permissible. Only Congress has the authority to impose and regulate tariffs. You don't get to do this by signing an executive order in the White House. And this is a stunning decision. It's not clear that the White House was ready for it yesterday. They immediately launched an appeal against it. And of course, like so many other legal rulings that have gone against the administration, this is a big one, and it's going to set the stage for the ultimate showdown between Donald Trump and the courts, whether it's on tariffs, whether it's on his decision to use the Foreign Alien Enemies Act of 1798 to engage in mass deportations, on a whole array of issues, the shutdown of government departments, the firing of hundreds of thousands of federal workers, many of which have been overturned by the courts. All of these cases are now heading down parallel paths to an ultimate showdown with the judiciary. And as you and I have discussed before, the ultimate story of Donald Trump's second term in office will be determined by whether he adheres to court rulings or simply steamrollers them.
A judiciary, academia, media. You can't be a fascist. You can't become a dictator unless you've got all three of those phenomena jumping, dancing to your tune. And he's trying his damnedest to get all three of them in position.
Yeah, and what is so interesting about this court decision is that essentially the court is saying, you've done these tariffs the wrong way. There is a mechanism for doing some of these tariffs, and it's important, I think, to underscore that it's only the Liberation Day tariffs that are affected by this decision. So the earlier tariffs on steel, aluminium, foreign cars, car parts that are imported into the United States, those stay, because he used different legal authorities to justify those tariffs. He could, if he wanted to, have gone to Congress with a package of proposed tariffs and said to Congress, this is what I want to do, and then Congress in time-honoured fashion would have discussed it and legislated on it and voted on it, and he may have got some of them through. But in Donald Trump's world, that's hard work. That's hard work.
You think that's it's that simple?
And he wants to do
like
an end run around Congress on everything. He wants a superannuated executive. He wants an all-powerful presidency. And so he's decided to wander down this road. But on this occasion, he's been upended by the courts. And now he's being given 10 days to unwind these tariffs or face legal sanctions.
And crucially, the case was launched by U.S. businesses and states. It's not sort of Hillary Clinton continuity party or you know, pesky lefties or you know, students. It is U.S. states and U.S. businesses explaining to the court that he has absolutely kebabbed them.
Well, and also, of course, because US businesses understand the logic that economists advance that is completely rejected by Donald Trump, that tariffs are going to lead to price inflation, supply chain issues. Even Donald Trump himself has conceded that the golden age that he has articulated that America is on the brink of achieving is still going to lead American parents this Christmas only to be able to buy a couple of dolls for their kids, not 30, because the prices are going to go up as a result of his tariffs. This court ruling completely upends the trade negotiations that are underway with the European Union.
And dozens of others.
And China as well, negotiations there. And I think it raises questions about the US-UK economic prosperity deal, which, let's remember, our own Prime Minister hailed alongside Donald Trump, you know, in that speakerphone conversation just 3 weeks ago. I mean, the carve-outs for steel, aluminium and 100,000 British cars every year going into the United States remain. But that deal acknowledged the 10% reciprocal baseline tariffs on everything else would remain in force. Trump's now being given 10 days to unwind those 10% tariffs. And also, James, it was only earlier this week that Lord Mandelson made a speech in Washington, D.C., engaging in a pretty extraordinary soft soap routine towards President Donald Trump, paying tribute to what Lord Mandelson, the British ambassador to Washington, described as Donald Trump's acute political instincts. Well, the court in this ruling was clearly not acknowledging that Donald Trump has acute political instincts and was basically saying he's a wannabe dictator and we're going to stop him.
And we're all that can stop him. I mean, Mandelson's in D.C. to do a job,
yes,
isn't he? And that job is to try to keep Trump sweet, even as he embarks upon ever more unprecedented acts, which you chronicle quite perfectly. Of course, The man that was also supposed to deliver epic financial benefits to ordinary Americans, Elon Musk, he's been handed his sandwiches wrapped in a roadmap.
Well, he's bowed to the inevitable. I mean, I see that the website Politico this morning is reporting that you could hear champagne corks popping all over Washington in the corridors of power with the news that Elon Musk has made it official. He is departing the president's inner circle, abandoning his efforts at engaging in any kind of governing after, of course, he famously brought his chainsaw to Washington, D.C., a literal chainsaw that he was prancing around on the stage, boasting about, even as he was eviscerating hundreds of thousands of federal government jobs, consigning the U.S. Agency for International Development, as he put it, to the wood chipper. One government department alone, the disappearance of which, according to Boston University School of Public Health, is resulting in 103 deaths worldwide every hour because USAID's programs of development and humanitarian assistance have come to a crashing halt. He's left with a bit of a challenge to Donald Trump, criticizing Donald Trump's proposed tax cuts, saying that they are going to fuel the deficit, saying that his public expenditure requests in his budget bill that he submitted to Congress will fuel deficits and will only serve to undo the good that he, Elon Musk, claims to have done through
claims
his campaign.
To have done. Claims so let's to have, done. A look at that, because he told us, or he told Americans he'd save $2 trillion.
And he saved, he hasn't saved $1.8 trillion. So he saved about $200 billion by his own numbers.
So that's his numbers.
And those numbers need to be held up to fact sunlight checked. As well, yes. Absolutely. So he has...
tiny percentage, even if he was telling the truth, which is far from certain of what he promised he would achieve.
Yeah,
this is sort of peak Trump. How could they possibly have fallen out? They're peas in a pod.
It is tempting to say that his time running the Department of Government Efficiency, which of course is not really a government department, was a failure because he didn't come close to saving the $2 trillion that he promised. And in those terms, it is. But I think it's also important to underscore, first of all, the hundreds of thousands of lives he's upended over the course of the last, 120-odd days. But also the fact that he has engaged in substantial personal enrichment as a result of the position that he enjoyed there.
Yeah, and speaking of substantial personal enrichment, David Frum, who's a writer I admire enormously, has written a characteristically packed piece for the Atlantic website, which in some ways made me wonder whether we overthink things, Simon, and overcomplicate and look for the master plan and look for the hidden agenda, whereas in fact, as Frum writes, he is simply taking self-enrichment to a scale never seen before in America. Never mind the judges, never mind the fascism, never mind the laws. For Trump and his closest family and cronies, it's all about the Benjamin.
It's all about the money. I mean, and it is completely unprecedented. We've never seen personal enrichment like this. Trump and his family made $2.9 billion out of one thing, the meme coin that he and Melania launched in the days leading up to the inauguration. They got out of it in time. They pocketed the money. 764,000 Americans lost everything that they put into the meme coin. And that's just one area of enrichment. If you look at the recent travel to Saudi Arabia, Qatar, the UAE, it was preceded by travel to Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and the UAE by Donald Trump Jr., who was signing business deals all over the region for the Trump Organization. We haven't seen any of the kabuki this time around that we saw in 2017 when Trump signed those documents. Yeah, do you remember he was in that room with the huge binders next to him and he signed documents that the American people were told meant that he was recusing himself from any control over his business empire? Of course, reporters in the room asked to see the documents and were told, oh, no, you can't look at them, they're confidential. Many reporters in the room concluded that the documents, these binders full of paper, were actually blank pieces of paper, that there was nothing there. But at least they went through the kabuki.
Feels like the good old days.
This time round, not even a pretense.
Oh, there you go, jinx. Padlock 1, 2, 3. Frum writes, nothing like this has been attempted or even imagined in the history of the American presidency. Throw away the history books, discard feeble comparisons to scandals of the past. There is no analogy with any previous action by any past president. And this bit really stings. The brazenness of the self-enrichment resembles nothing seen in any earlier White House. This is American corruption on the scale of a post-Soviet republic or a post-colonial African dictatorship.
Well, it's a golden age for him and his family and for the people in his inner circle and to some extent for Elon Musk, who has secured all of these new contracts for Starlink. And of course, SpaceX is at the center of, NASA's efforts to try and get to Mars and all of that kind of stuff. But it's absolutely not a golden age for millions of Americans who backed him for a second term in the White House and are now being told you're not going to be able to afford Christmas presents for your kids.
And final question, because you've got to limber up for your performance later. What are they realizing this? Is there buyer's remorse?
There is some indication in some polling data that in many parts of the country, people who voted for Donald Trump are moving away from Donald Trump. But there is not data to suggest that that movement is happening at the clip the Democrats need in the key battleground states where the midterm elections are going to be fought next November and where 2028 is going to be fought or won, assuming we have a free and fair election in the United States, both next November and in November of 2028. Yeah. And, I cannot overstate the extent to which Democrats and their leaders have basically become irrelevant in the minds of Americans and are struggling to secure any moment, any brief moment in the Klieg lights of media attention, because to come back to where we started, Trump understands the tsunami of activity, even when it's negative for him, like this court ruling, it takes all the attention away from everybody else, and those Klieg lights remain firmly on him, which is just the way he likes it.
Good Lord. Apart from that, it's all going brilliantly.
Absolutely. Can't wait to get back.
Simon Marks, it's such a pleasure to have you around. It really is. Thank you for that. What time are you on tonight?
10 o'clock. 10 till 1 tonight.
10 till 1 tonight. You can have more of the Marks. It is coming up to 10 to 12 this morning.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
Just accept we need stop and search.
Straight to the point.
This is a shocking night.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
When was the last time your party was in touch with the electorate?
Listen on Global Player or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store, LBC.
I'm making a robot head with an Amazon box. I've painted it silver, and Daddy helped me make it.
At Amazon, we're actually using paper bags for more of our deliveries.
And now, I'm making a paper hot air balloon. And I even made a little brown basket. And I'm making a dog that looks just like Monty.
Just one of the ways we've reduced the weight of our packaging by more than 40% since 2015. Which is still good for playtime.
Mom, where's the scissors?
To learn more, visit aboutamazon.co.uk/sustainability.
It's your home, darling. Let's make it fabulous. High scoring isn't my forte, but there's no arguing with Trustpilot ratings. Shutterly Fabulous have an expert team of fitters who specialise in one thing, simply gorgeous window shutters. Made to measure, hand-finished and expertly installed. Make your home Shutterly Fabulous. So don't give up, darling. Book a free consultation with our expert shutter fitters today.
Getting ready for summer? It's time to scrub the barbecue, mow the lawn and dust off the wine glasses. At Waitrose, we're getting ready with 25% off six or more bottles of wine or fizz over £6. Like a fruity San Leo Prosecco, perfect with aged Parma ham. Or a crisp Whispering Angel Rosé, ideal for your first barbecue. And our number one Chablis, the aromas of fresh peach pair beautifully with a seafood salad. Start the summer with some great savings at Waitrose. Selected stores online, subject to availability. Excludes Scotland, boxed wines and bottles priced £100 and over.
What's your possible? The vision only you can make happen. Whatever the size of your business, accelerate your growth with the Intuit QuickBooks AI-powered platform. Power your possible with the number one recommended cloud accounting software, Intuit QuickBooks. Based on a survey of 506 UK accounting professionals. Verify at quickbooks.co.uk/verify.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Leading Britain's conversation. LBC with James O'Brien.
It's 11:51. I've been getting a bit cross with the government because they have not been inviting my esteemed colleagues, Natasha Clark and Aggie Chambray, to ask questions recently, even after they've schlepped halfway around the country to attend various conferences. And given the size of LBC's audience, there is no logical reason for that whatsoever, particularly when you look at the pitiful ratings of some of the organisations, both in print and in broadcast, who do get questions. So I am somewhat relieved to see our esteemed colleague Aggie Chambray on the television screen to my left and right, putting a question to Keir Starmer a few moments ago. I think we may as well have a little listen to that before 12 o'clock when Mystery Hour kicks in. But before all of that, back to this question of carrying a knife and the tricky territory of introducing nuance. The idea that it's very easy to be utterly repulsed by the prospect, but does that ignore the reality of the lives being led by the people for whom knives are a commonplace factor? Io has been waiting for ages, for which I apologise. He's in Romford, or he was at least when he rang in. He might be in Poland by now. Io, what would you like to say?
I'm still in Romford, James.
Glad to hear it. Go on.
So I am repulsed by young people carrying around knives. I really am. It's something that, you know, I try to encourage the young people around me not to do. I'm 42 years old. I grew up in Hackney, you know, on the sort of like rougher side of town, should I say, yeah?
Okay, yeah.
But I watched a video on X. I bumped into a video on X a few weeks ago that made me actually sort of like change how I feel about it and actually distilled why a lot of these people are carrying knives. So it was a CCTV footage of a youth in a chicken shop with his girlfriend, I assume, right? They're eating chicken or whatever. And then two men walk into that chicken shop, both carrying large knives. Okay.
Yeah.
He immediately pulled out a really big knife himself.
Okay.
And it looked like he practiced, to be honest.
Yeah.
And he successfully sort of fended them off. Now, I was watching that video thinking to myself, if that was my son in that situation, I would want him to have that knife. And that goes
against he'd need to have the skills as well, wouldn't he?
He would have to have the skills, but the truth of the matter is, if he didn't have that knife with him at all, he would have been killed. He would have been killed there. Obviously, I'm describing the video, but if you saw the video, I can assure you they meant to basically do him harm. Okay, now I don't know obviously the context of it.
Well, you need to. I mean, I'm not going to have an argument with you about this for two reasons. Number one, I don't want to, and number two, I haven't seen the footage. But it sounds as if they knew who he was. They knew each other. So your son presumably would automatically not be in that category of being involved in beef with knife carrying gang members, or would he? I don't know. Well, then if he's going around carrying a knife, he's a crime waiting to... Well, not just waiting to happen, he's a crime being committed.
But also, James, what I've observed over the years of growing up is sometimes parents think that their children are upstanding members of society,
yes,
and they are, you know, they're getting on with things, they're doing well at school, all the rest of it. But they have no idea what the life that their child is living. Like, they have no idea whatsoever. They could have a gun in the house and they would have no idea. This happens all the time. So what the point I was saying is that basically there are a lot of children out there that are carrying knives because they are scared. They are literally thinking, if I don't have this on me, if I am attacked, I will die. So I need to have this on me.
And that means, I mean, it doesn't necessarily remove the possibility of dying, but it perhaps reduces it slightly and increases the likelihood of somebody else dying. So, I mean, objectively or in a utilitarian sense, it's a hiding to nothing. But so what now if you discover that your son is carrying a knife? You'll say, good luck, boy?
No way. I mean, me personally, I would, if that was the case, I would take my sons out of the environment completely. I'd leave the country.
Right.
I'd honestly, like, if I thought that they were getting involved in that sort of thing, they'd leave the country. But having said that, James, yeah, this is an honest, true story. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a restaurant, okay? I've got a Nigerian restaurant in Hackney, so I get all sorts of people coming in there, right?
Sure.
Now, I know for a fact that there was a parent that took their son to Nigeria because they were getting involved in knife crime, okay? Now, basically, when he went to Nigeria, he went to the British Embassy and told them that he was kidnapped and he was like...
We did a phone-in on this, actually.
Yeah,
not that specific case, but similar.
Yeah, and he got brought back to the UK.
Yeah.
And he ended up actually stabbing someone.
Wow.
And that is just... That is the truth of that. That is like a true story, which I'm telling you.
I don't doubt it for a minute. I mean, Ghana as well is a popular place for...
You know what? Education, James, is the main thing. Let me tell you this, right? I grew up in Hackney with... And I have friends, yeah, that are in prison. I have, like, you know, people I grew up with in prison.
Sure.
And I'll tell you, the difference between how it was then and now, things like summer university, I got sent to go to summer university during, you know, school holidays.
Yeah.
I'd be given this, like, this book. You could go to computers, you could do dance, you could do anything for
like
the whole
summer
6 weeks.
Like a summer school.
Yeah, and it was free, and it was provided by Tower Hamlets, yeah?
Yeah.
I used to do that every single summer. During that time, I basically picked up computer skills, and fast forward 25 years later, I've worked all around the world as a, you know, software developer.
Okay.
Now, I don't know how you can measure that, but things like that do not exist no more. If I had to do the same thing for my three children during summer, I'd probably have to spend about $2,000-$4,000 to get anywhere close to that. And I think these are the things that are not measurable, that you can't really say, okay, you stop this guy getting involved in this, or you stop this guy getting involved in that, because, you know, during his informative years, he was occupied with XYZ. You can't measure that. And I think that people do not realize yet the value of those things. I know so many people from the hood, yeah, who ended up on these courses, ended up basically finding a passion.
It shows you something else.
Something
it just
great.
Shows you a path you wouldn't have found by yourself. An opportunity. See, you make me feel a bit ashamed because my upbringing and education was obviously the polar opposite. And, you know, one of the schools I went to had an 18-hole golf course and a pack of beagles, Io. So we were never short of things to do when we weren't in class and opportunities. And we were very much educated to believe we could be anything when we grew up. And that's why I used to dismiss this argument when I started here, and people would say we need more youth clubs. I just had this image of you know, I don't know, the famous five or Enid Blyton drinking ginger beer and playing table tennis. But in fact, of course, if you've got nothing to do, you're more likely to do something you shouldn't do.
Exactly. I totally agree with that. It is such a massive, massive thing. And you know what? If anyone's listening who remembers Summer University, Tower Hamlets and all that, bring that back. That was the best. Those were the best summers, yeah, of my life, honestly.
Oh, that's amazing to hear. And I don't know the politics of it. I don't know who ended it or why it no longer happens. But goodness me, they're not going to get a better poster boy for it than you, mate. Seriously, it is just coming up to 12 noon. So, sorry to Noah, to Layla and Barry and a few others. I'm going to crack on. It's Mystery Hour next, and people hate it when we wait for that. But I do think we should just listen to... I can't really kick off about them not giving us a question, can I? If I don't then play out the question being asked by LBC's brilliant... Oh, I think Aggie's on the line. So, Aggie, over to you.
Hello, James. Yes, I have just... Sir Keir Starmer has just finished speaking, and he did this press conference. A lot of it was to talk really about Nigel Farage and his fantasy politics, almost like Liz Truss, as he said. But I also asked him this question about this ad that has been up in Scotland, and it claims that Anasawa wanted to prioritise the Pakistani community, and Farage made this defence of it on Tuesday, saying it was Sawar that introduced sectarianism into Scottish politics. I asked Sir Keir Starmer for his response, and this is what he said.
What we've seen with reform in Scotland in relation to this particular video is manipulation. And it is, as ever, with reformer Nigel Farage, trying to divide people with a toxic divide and to poison our politics. And I think our politics is above that. And that's why I think it's absolutely right.